For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt.
And I'm Bill Brenner.
You're listening to Security Wire Weekly, reporting from the RSA Conference 2007 in San Francisco.
Episode 2, David F. Drabb of Xerox Global Services and former FBI agent. Bill, this interview was conducted by our executive editor, Dennis Fisher. Why don't you introduce this one?
David Drabb, principal of Xerox Global Services, talks about steps his organization has been taking to address the security concerns of his customers. And he also talks about some of his experiences during his time in the FBI.
Hi, this is Dennis Fisher. I'm here with David Drabb, the Principal of Information Content Security Services in the Xerox Global Services Division. David, thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here, Dennis.
All right. David, I know you were involved in the case that produced the first indictment under the Economic Espionage Act. Can you tell me a little bit about that case and how you were involved?
Well, the investigation was based upon a report that critical information in the form of research had been taken by one of the inside researchers and was taken back to Japan, and the intention was that the research would be completed in Japan. And the investigation was initiated to determine the facts and circumstances of how this actually unfolded. What was important about the investigation was that it was investigated and charged under the Economic Espionage Act of 1996. And what happened after the indictment of one of the lead scientists in the research was a series of pretrial motions in the Federal District Court in Cleveland. And through those motions, it was accepted by the courts that this research constituted a trade secret under the Act. And up to that point, a trade secret generally had to be, or was generally viewed, more correctly, as a product that affects interstate commerce. But research that had not yet been published was classifiable as a trade secret, and it did stand the test under the Federal District Court review.
And how long ago was that? What year was that case?
Investigation began in like 1999. The indictment was in the spring of 2001, and it was in early 2003 that the High Court in Japan ruled that the defendant in the case would not be extradited back to the United States. But it's important to note that the Ministry of Justice in Japan in fact concurred with the findings of the Department of Justice in the investigation. And they did agree to extradite, but as a part of an appeal process, the High Court in Japan decided they would not extradite. So the case was never adjudicated in a court of law. But as I said earlier, there were pretrial motions that dealt with a number of issues around the newness of the statute in determining whether it would actually be a trade secret or not.
So that's 7 or 8 years ago, and that sounds to me like the very beginnings of what everybody is so hot to talk about these days, which is this threat from insiders in corporations. And that's a lot of what the security companies who are here now are talking about, too. Was that seen as a threat back when you were with the FBI, or were still people still focused on outsiders and
I think before we encountered this new world that we live in today, that's highly globalized, highly technical, we have internet connectivity, digitalization of all information assets, the diversified business models, and new technologies that are constantly inundating the enterprise environment. We began to see that the traditional methods of protecting information or assets in a physical sense had changed. So in the old sense, you had a critical asset and you locked it in a vault. You initiated policies for employees to follow regarding the handling and the access of those assets, and then you also ensured that there were technical measures to control the asset as well. But now the environment is dramatically changed, and information assets and the perimeter of a particular environment is obscured. It's very difficult to know where the borders of a document are today, because they reside in the digital world and are accessible all around the world. So getting back to what you said earlier, the inside threat has always been around, but it's being appreciated in a different way today because of the enormous damage that an individual can deliver to an organization, just in being able to access, download, and walk out the door with a lot of assets. In the old days, you had to haul a file cabinet out of the organization, but today you can do it with an iPod and have access to a whole lot of information.
So during your time with the FBI, how much of a priority was computer crime? It didn't seem like it was that much. You know, they had a lot of other things to worry about, you know, during the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But how much did you hear about it then, and how do you think that's changed at this point?
Well, there was a dramatic change. As the computer world emerged, somewhat in disbelief of many that it would actually become the mainstream of communicating. In my latter days in the FBI, it was evident that nearly every case that an agent investigated involved a computer in some way, that there was communication by email, or there was some aspect of the investigation that brought you back to a computer. And that was a turning point, if you will, in realizing that that computers were very much part of the world that we live in.
In the last few years, I've seen a lot of talk from security researchers and others talking about sort of the threat and the vulnerability of network devices, not necessarily computers, but copiers, other sort of, not dumb, but I'm not sure what the right word is, but non-PC network devices. How real do you think that threat is to corporate networks?
Very real. Copy machines were simply copy machines. And in the late 90s, when vendors such as Xerox began to add features to these devices, they added not only a lot of functionality, but a lot of sophistication in design. And because of that, there was a lot of risk that had not existed prior to that. A multifunction device is highly sophisticated and presents a degree of risk to the network environment if it's not properly managed and configured. Is it likely that they're going to be a point of attack in an organization? That's debatable. It depends on the funding, the motivations of an attacker with what they need to do to gain access to the information. But the multifunction device environment is certainly an avenue that could be used. And what we try to do with our customers is to educate them about the risk of these devices and enable them to realize that with these sophisticated devices, they can have a high degree of functionality, productivity, and at the same time, they can have control and accountability, because when a document moves through a scanning function or a fax feature, it's accounted for. It can be determined through logging and so forth what is occurring. And more importantly, the data as it resides on the device is encrypted, or residual data on these devices in memory is erased automatically or on demand. And users are authenticated to the device, which is critical, again, in a network environment to be able to account for the actions of employees who are using these kind of devices.
I didn't realize that you had the capability to encrypt the data on there. Was that in response to customers asking for that sort of functionality, or was that something that Xerox proactively initiated?
Customers requested certain types of security, and certainly our engineers are ahead of the game, if you will, in working far in advance to introduce these kind of features to the device, to the next product rollout. So we've introduced disk encryption, for example. We've introduced a different scheduled kind of erasure of a hard disk drive, and a number of other capabilities to include encryption of scanning communications to and from the device with HTTPS and with IPsec for internal print jobs as well.
All right. So when you talk to customers these days, what are the threats that you hear about from them that are really top of mind for them, the ones that are keeping them up at night?
Accounting for the access to documents, tracking documents is highly critical. To wake up one morning and find a document displayed on an internet site or a website is a little disconjoining to any C-level executive. The risk that protected or privacy-protected information or confidential trade secret information falling into the wrong hands is one of growing concern, because we realize that with the advent of regulatory law and the mandates that go with it, is responsibility. We have not seen a great degree of enforcement or penalties invoked on organizations or C-level executives that fail to adhere to Gramm-Leach-Bliley or HIPAA, but I believe that one day we will. The handwriting's on the wall, and the requirement of being able to properly control, manage, and secure information assets, whether they're trade secrets that affects a shareholder's decision in buying stocks and buying shares in an organization, or whether it's a financial institution that has an obligation to protect financial information of customers. It's an enormous mandate that's been imposed on organizations. And with the risk of organized groups to attack enterprises to acquire that kind of information, it's enough to keep anybody up at night.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, with your FBI background, how I've done a few stories in the past about the influence of organized crime, particularly Eastern European groups and folks like that getting into the hacking underground and making it a for-profit business. How real is that? How much of a threat are those groups? How involved are they in that sort of activity?
You really only need to consider the idea that information is money, and then you begin to realize how serious it really is. Because organized crime, whether it's U.S.-based or Asian-based or Eastern European-based, is going to go after the money. Former intelligence organizations from the former Soviet Union, for example, have had to move into new careers, if you will. Many of them have ended up with corporations on the corporate side. Many of them have gone into private security. And if anyone has a doubt that methods used in acquiring information would be all above board and lawful, has another thing coming. Fact of the matter is, information, whether it's organized identity theft rings or any type of enterprise that is recruited to be the infrastructure of a money-making machine like that, is going to take advantage of it. And it's certainly occurring, and has to be a factor, you know, has to be considered, not only from a corporate point of view, but as individuals and citizens, to be mindful of that kind of risk.
Getting back to what you were talking about before about the C-level responsibility for some of these things, you know, it seems like just in the last year or so, I think there's been a change where those days are gone where you can sort of the senior executives can sort of plead ignorance and say, well, we didn't really know this was much of a problem. We didn't know we were supposed to tell people when people stole our data. I think those days are rapidly retreating, and it seems like we're on the verge of, you know, we've seen some CEOs lose their jobs. We've seen a lot of CSOs lose their jobs over those type of things. Do you foresee more regulation, more legislation from the federal government in terms of data theft, data breaches, notification laws, all of that sort of thing?
Yeah, I do. I think we're going to first see more uniform enforcement of these laws. HIPAA, for example, there's only been a few criminal type probes in regards to HIPAA enforcement. And perhaps organizations today are suffering from regulatory fatigue in preparing and resourcing their enterprises to be able to be compliant. But I think it's the calm before the storm. I think there will be a day when we see greater and greater degrees of accountability at the C level, and rightfully so.
And that ends this special edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts and our RSA coverage at our RSA coverage page at searchsecurity.com/RSA07. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. For Dennis Fisher and for Bill Brenner, have a great day.